just segue, as they say in America, into genetics. Let's look at the sort of biology of people. And the starting point here is actually, I've got this idea from Bertrand Russell on impulses. You know, if you look at, for example, children, they sort of jump around and run around and things. It's not because they think it's a good thing to do. It's just an impulse. And although the mechanism is not known, nobody knows how the brain works, as far as I know. And of course, it must be fairly simple. It must be mediated by biochemistry, basically. It's a simple kind of thing which can be sort of perverted in various ways, but this is part of the sort of human condition. You've got your genetics. And I want to... Let's start with Jews here. There's this... if you look at the background of Jews, there's the lack of it's a bit
empathy.
Well, I was starting at something more primitive than that. The territory, if you're in an area which has endless strips of sand, endless sand, or for that matter, endless grassland, you know, steppes, that kind of thing. There's no natural barriers. If you look at Europe, if you look at the map of Europe, it's split up into all kinds of different areas which are fairly defensible without being cut off from each other. They've got mountain ranges between them, which to this day demarcate boundaries of things like Switzerland, you know, Italy, France and Spain and so on, and Ireland, England, and the countries. It used to be difficult to get to the northern countries because of ice, you know, they didn't have motorways and so on. But with Jews, there is this vast feeling that you've got this vast area, and the natural tendency is to sort of have as many kids as possible and kill off everybody you can do. And I think that's a genetic thing which is important in Jews, and it's generally called parasitism. I've got quite a nice note on parasitism in one of my pieces online. It's in the Guide for the Perplexed about Jews, and it goes into this detail that civilization started, or was believed to have started, in the Middle East, in Sumer, Akkad, that kind of thing, and Egypt, and Jews kind of developed as a new line, as secret and aggressive. They were kind of aggressive. They were in effect there. Top of the pecking order in mentality, but they had to keep it secret. They're sort of crypto leaders, and all of their genetics is designed to mislead people, to disguise them. And in fact, I think, I don't know if you'd agree with this, the idea that in the beginning was the Word, you know, it's a Jewish thing. If the natural way, the Western way, so to speak, if you want to predict or project yourself back to the beginning of time, you naturally think the first thing must have been food, or, you know, animals, or maybe housing, timber, water, something like that. You think it in terms of objects. Yeah, that's what was there at the start. Presumably, it must have been. But the Jewish attitude is that the beginning was the Word, and that's a kind of abstract thing. It means, they don't mean a word. They mean propaganda and specialization in deceit and lies. You see, in the beginning was the Word. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Well, their Talmud certainly goes down that line. I mean, you know, they even say anyone who teaches the Talmud to a not any Jew that makes the Talmud available or teaches the Talmud to a non-Jew is to be killed. You know, they don't want any of their secrets revealed, and what they're really about revealed. And, you know, that just goes to show the increased censorship that you mentioned earlier that we're seeing today, because people are waking up. And I think that the all this immigration they're pushing us, and all the other Jewish destabilization techniques that you ran through, it's being aimed at the white race, because we're the only people that have ever kicked them out of countries. You know, over 100 times in their history they've been kicked out of white nations. And so I understand that there's a report that's been discussed that straight after the Second World War they made the decision that, right, we're going to have to wipe out all the white people, and they've got onto that ever since. And then you see how you know, much or percentage of the world's population has dwindled since that point.
I think that's right, and that's certainly correct in detail. But of course, they need collaborators to go along with it. You get these people like sort of Tony Blair, or Harold Wilson, this kind of stuff. Anyway, so they specialise in doing that, and they completely ruined these places up to Egypt by just. This is what makes me think it's genetic, actually. They don't seem to have any idea of when to stop, they just keep going. I think it's an impulse which is built into them, that whatever you say, whatever they think about things, they're going to just keep going. And it's a parasitism. If you watch things like, cuckoos, videos of cuckoos, or things like there's an emerald beetle, which is specialised, it's evolved to attack cockroaches, and, you know, they don't need lessons to do it, they don't have a detailed instruction book on what nests you should lay eggs in. They just do it, and I think, you know, arguably that's a Jewish deep-seated thing, which is mediated by their biochemistry. And of course it goes along with having high incidence of things like schizophrenia and what have you. And one of the things they do, what they're good at, is identify possible splits. You know, they look at any group and they'll find a split. I don't think they think about it. I think they just look and see. If you find, Protestants and Catholics, or Germans and French, or, you know, you can name it, Britons and Americans, they play them up. And they, in my view, they generally don't seem to understand truth. You know, they have they've got no idea that science was and is difficult. They just think in terms of money. They think they can sort of buy experts, even if experts like to be thin on the ground as a result of it. I think it's the same psychology as blacks. Blacks are told that that they seem to think that. Everything was invented by blacks. They seem to think that, for example, plumbing was stolen from Africans. Absolute, you know, ridiculous nonsense. But it's a thought, a way of thinking that comes easily to Jews. And when they're given some sort of creative position, they can't handle it. I mean, there were no battery chickens in the USSR, for example, which might have seemed an ideal way for Jews to... to kind of exploit the USSR. And in the USSR, all they talked about was their politics, Jewish politics, and things like electricity supply and, you know, things like building. It was all done by foreigners who were essentially paid by Jewish money, supplied by Jews from the US and Germany and so on.
You mentioned Harold Wilson and... Tony Blair, and I looked up the Charlemagne Prize, which of course is relating to people who imposed the policies of Richard van Coudenhove-Kalergi, the Coudenhove-Kalergi plan. Tony Blair got the prize in 1999. Roy Jenkins got the prize. So Wilson didn't get it, but it says on the Wikipedia page, you and I both know about Roy Jenkins, but it said he served in several major posts in Harold Wilson's first government. As Home Secretary in 1965-67, he sought to build what he described as a civilised society with measures such as the effective abolition in Britain of both capital punishment and theatre censorship, the decriminalisation of homosexuality, relaxing of divorce law, suspension of birching, and the liberalisation of abortion law.
Well,
so there's a few things that you've gone through earlier.
That's exactly right. There's another instinctive theory I've got about Jews, which is that group lying is an instinct. You know how sheep, if you've got a flock of sheep, they all sort of stick together, you know? Or in fact, I believe there's some genetic version which causes sheep not to... They sort of scatter. Now, most people, I think, because they feel part of a community, they're not very happy about lying. But I think group lying is instinctive with Jews. And if you think back before things like, notebooks and video recordings and all this kind of stuff, there was, you really had people's opinions on what really happened, and if a group would stick together telling lies, they must have got away with an awful lot of stuff just by being persuasive or being insistent. Do you know what I'm saying? If you watch some of the,
yeah, And what I would say on that point, just what I would say on that point, is the Jews promote diversity for us, but they encourage racial cohesion for themselves. Because they, as the way you just described is exactly the way that they work. They operate as a single being, and they will reinforce the lies of other Jews because their only loyalty is to other Jews. And that's
saying that's possibly instinctive or genetic. You sometimes see these videos now with, do you remember that one of the Melissa Click, this kind of thing? You get these Jews and they get in some sort of fight or something, and they all say, "Oh, let him go, let him go, let him go," or, "You know, he hit me first," this kind of thing. And then the cop says, "Oh, well, we've got videos," and they look completely baffled and troubled by it, because their instinctive reaction is that if they all say something, then people are going to go along with it. Do you take the point I'm making? If you watch some of these videos, there are a lot of them now about this recent Trump thing, because the official Jew view is supposedly that they're anti-Trump, which of course it may be an act, but you get these you get these rather laughable videos where, you know, the cop takes some bloke down and all the onlookers, all the onlooking Jews say, "You know, let him go, he didn't hit him," or something. And the fact that there's evidence is something anti-instinctive. Jews just cannot get past this idea that if they all say lies together, that's going to work, you know. And you see people like
the Holocaust. What they do is they criminalize people talking about it. That's how they cover up their lies. So they don't allow debate. And what they're trying to do now with closing down YouTubes and results on Google search engine and all this, because when they took all those books down from Amazon, mine included, they could have, if there was, there's such laws in all our countries of libel and slander. And so they could have taken people to court and said, "Right, this is libelous, this is not true." But they don't want to do that because they know it's true. And so, and also they don't want to do it because they don't want to draw attention to it. So what do? They get Amazon to boycott stuff. And then they go to the US Congress and Senate with a bill that won't allow people to boycott them. You know, these people are insane. They are just schizophrenic. Yeah. And it just, they don't have any shame whatsoever. And as you say, they stick together as a group. And the reason that they've got no effective opposition amongst us is because all the things you went through earlier that they've used to destabilize us as a race has lost our social and racial cohesion, whilst they maintain their own. They know that a strong racial society is something that they couldn't infiltrate. That's why they have to destroy all these white societies, because then we're right for the pickings.
I think that's true, but I'm just getting at the genetic basis of it. You know, I think it's an instinct with them. Somebody like Lipstadt, you know, she announces that the so-called Holocaust is the most documented event in history. She'll probably go to her grave telling lies, because it's instinctive with her. And actually, there's another thing which I mentioned in one of my pieces online. It's in my Truth About Jews. I've got some articles on Jews which suddenly got popular, re-revisionist articles on Jews. I put up quite a long piece recently, and I've suggested there are some really weird things here. I mean, for example, this idea of ugliness. You see these really hideous women. I mean, in Britain's got these ones who are, well, hideous. And I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of group cohesion, because if you've got a lot of people who they're told, you know, you've got to, this is the Jewish thing to do, is marry this bloke or this woman, and they're ugly, it sort of reinforces it. Do you see what I mean? It means that they're willing to suppress their sort of natural, what I presume are natural feelings of revulsion. But that's not a very popular thing.
Essentially, when you look at some of these Jewish women, you know, these actresses and stuff like that, when they get older, they do have that sort of evil look about them. Yeah. You know, the sort of faces and things like that. It's almost like as they get older, they really do have that, you know, serpentine look.
Witch-like expression.
You know, and some of the people you mentioned, when you talk about feminism and, you know, Gloria Allred and Betty Friedan and all these prominent Jews involved in it. I mean, there's a long list of them. I've only got a couple there that I come to mind. But it's just, it's insidious behind everything. And, I mean, my own feeling is it's a scriptural, I mean, Jesus Christ in the Bible said, ye are of your father the devil. And when you cross-reference that passage in John chapter 8 with the book of Mark, I believe, chapter 7, and it says that he was talking to the Pharisees and all the Jews. And so I think that all the Jews today are descended from those Jews, and they're just, they are here to do evil, and they're here to do as much as they possibly can, and they see that they've got a job on, and that's to kill off white people, because white people are the people who have historically done them the most
the
harm.
The Amalek idea, yeah.
In their, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's in their eyes, because you see, their attitude is what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine. So they can't understand how they can't come to our country, subvert it, take all the wealth into their hands, make us work as slaves for them. They don't comprehend why we would object to that, because to their mind, you know, they have a right to do that because their Talmud says it. And so if someone was to speak up and say you can't do that, they'd be like, well, our Talmud says we can, you're our slaves. You used to look at all these prominent rabbis in Israel, that all these quotes by so many of them, you know, the goyim are like cattle and they're here to be our slaves and all this garbage that they come out with. And so the best, if you really want to deal with Jews, is you just put them in their own area and let them parasite off each other. And in the end, you'll be only left with a handful, because they'll just be picking each other off then. That's why Jews, you get them in every country, because they say in their Talmud that if a Jew is fleecing a Christian or whatever, well, they say another Jew's not allowed to fleece the same one. Until one is finished with them. And so they go from place to place to place, country to country to country, and they go to all different areas in these countries so they can have their little group of people that they can parasite on.
That's true enough. There's another another point which nobody ever seems to mention, which is is how easy it is to, you know, it just makes decisions simple, you know. And we're here, we're thinking about, well, what's the best thing to do, what should we, what rights should we give these people, that people, and, you know, is this a good thing? Is that a bad thing? You know, should there be a legal system? But with the Jewish thing, it's just so easy, you know. If they ask, well, you know, you can murder all these Vietnamese and use them as prostitutes and stuff, and their answer is, well, do we make money out of it? Yeah, we do. Oh, right, so you do it. It does make for simplicity of judgments, you know. Do you take the point? I mean, Churchill is obviously, he was a patsy, he was a half-Jew, and it's an easy decision to make. He just wants Germany sort of bombed, you know, and preferably a lot of white English people killed off as well. But it's just so easy, it's so simple, whereas the, you know, in the West we've got all this kind of problem of wondering about what's the best, what's the right thing to do and so on. Yeah, let me just go, let's get, look at the genetics now of whites, which is another, which is not, which is kind of ignored or understated. There are various ideas here which I've got. One is just this business about being geographically split up, which makes defence easy, so you can pay attention to things which are not specifically just power related and to do with murdering people and stuff. And I take it, you see what I mean about that. There's, Europe is, if you look at the world map, Europe is abnormal in being, it's the only country in the world with very definitive subdivisions, apart possibly from parts of Asia. There are some differences there. I mean, Japan in some ways is comparable to Britain, and Korea in some ways resembles Italy. But anyway, the point I want to go at here is another thing which is to do with having dark nights in winter. You know, I mean, like in Britain here, we're not incredibly far north, but the nights are still twice as long as the day in winter, and that needs to, you have to have people who can sort of concentrate on things and specialise on things and carry out hobbies. I mean, if you're a chess player or something, it's adapted more to the to winter nights than it is to the equator. And I think specialisation and concentration is a characteristic of whites, although it does have its drawbacks. I mean, if you look at some of the hobbies that people have, the whites have, you know, they have things like, they like, for example, they might want to grow the biggest marrow in their town. It sounds, on a rational basis, it's pretty ludicrous. There's no point in doing that. Or if you look at tennis professionals, they spend, I mean, we normal people, you know, you watch Wimbledon once a year or something, but these people play tennis all year round, you know. And you get, when for example, wooden shipbuilding was an important thing, there must have been people who spent their whole lives carefully shaping beams and doing this sort of thing. And if you look at people today, with, for example, the people who tend steam engines, you know, which of course were high technology a couple of centuries ago, they're all whites, you know, they enjoy the sort of the oil and steam feeling and the hot atmosphere and stuff. And I think that's was essential for the growth of science. You had to have people who are somewhat individualistic. And in fact, if you look at IQ, that's a kind of conforms to that as a cheap way of testing people. It's essentially a kind of employee thing. It tests whether they can do useful pencil and paper things like, you know, reading and writing and calculating, and there's spatial tests, you know, so you might be good as an architect or something. But a JQ questionnaire would deal with, you know, the best, like the Talmud, when's the best place for discreet murder, or what fraud should you, and should you go in for, and so on. And I think whites are somewhat naive in the sense they tend to be, they tend to have this concentration. There's an easy tendency for them to sort of waste their lives on stuff. And there's an, sorry.
Well, sorry to jump in. It's the education. I mean, you just highlighted all these different things. You know, my education is better than the generation after me, and your education will be better than my education, because the education where you learn how to, you know, do mathematics, these days they're basically just given a calculator. And also it's that they're just, all their education is about is diversity and propaganda. And as each generation has passed, they've had more and more control of the educational system, and they've got rid of anything that we can use to make us individuals, to allow us to think independently. And it's all about, you can't say this, you can't say that, this person's feelings, right, that person's feelings, have, you know, and it's just a nonsense. So that's another thing that they've done to us.
Okay, there's another point about the genetics of whites, is that they tend to be, so to speak, whole societies. They're not just a little specialised subgroup like Jews are. And a whole society doesn't need kind of plodding people. It's not a very polite way of putting it. I mean, if you're a shepherd, for example, you've got to be, you can't just let them die. You've got to be, have a sort of awareness all the time, which actually struck me as a similar sort of temperament to people who look after banks of data. You know, I remember watching a YouTube video on the storage of, well, of YouTube, I think it was their own data storage, and they showed this chap who was kind of patrolling up and down these aisles. And of course, most of the time they're okay, the little lights go on and off, but every now and then there's a kind of emergency and they have to swap things. It's the same temperament as being a shepherd. And you also have to have builder types who are not clerical, they're not intellectual, they don't have a sort of theoretical view of what they're doing, but they can, through practical experience, they get the things worked. And of course, you've got a whole society like this, they're all different types, and this does fragment whites. And so of course that gives Jews an opportunity to do their stuff. I mean, here's an example in the military. White, this is a white bloke. He says, he's talking of persons of colour. I forget what the expression is they use. He says here, they love the military. They get free housing, free healthcare, free food, easy jobs. The Spics don't go for infantry. They do supply or food service or accounting or human resources, which is why military pay or paperwork is constantly fucked up. But the majority of the front line is white, yeah. And the the niggers and Spics who the white guys have to deal with when they're trying to get their missing links covered. Anyway, that's true enough. But the
is that a quote, yeah, from somewhere?
it's taken from some chap in YouTube, and with approval, and I've said, oh, this chap's got it exactly right. But the point is that the whites are, they kind of shade into fanaticism. You get, there are lots of YouTube comments where these people are proud of being, you know, militaristic, and they don't care what the enemy is. You know, they haven't got the sense to think out the enemy is. I mean, for example, the Vietnam War was against people who'd never done anything to harm Americans at all, and but you get these sort of gum-chewing head cases who are perfectly happy that they, you know, raped Vietnamese women and burnt other ones to death, because there's a kind of stupidity about whites which Jews can play on, particularly when they control language, media in different countries. You know, in Germany they have anti-British stuff, in Britain they had anti-German stuff, and of course
yeah, the other thing that they do, I mean, like, you read a comment there from YouTube, and you know, they're becoming so egregious, they're actually getting people to make comments like this in countries. You know, if you were to make a comment like that on a YouTube in the UK, you could get prosecuted. If you did a Twitter post like that, or if you did a Facebook post like that, they'll come after you if you use the language like the N-word, etc. Whereas in countries like America, and I think that this could be why they're allowing this sort of to pass with the alt-right in America, because if people see, if kids in the UK that get involved in the alt-right see comments like that on alt-right sites, etc., then they think that they can do the same, and then they do it, and they get arrested and jailed and what have you. I think that could be another aspect of why they're, although of course they have the First Amendment in the USA, they've used other means of cracking down on this sort of speech with their affirmative action, all that sort of stuff, other ways of protecting the what they refer to as the minorities that they've brought in themselves.
Yeah, that's right, it's a trap, that's true. The other thing I was going to say here was that, of course, there's a thing about individualism that's particularly popular in the US, and it only occurred to me recently that, of course, if you want a city built or a whole country, you get all these people thinking they're individualists, and they go out and, of course, they've got things like, you know, saws and hammers and the ways of building things, so they've got a basis. They're not individualist in that sense. They don't invent stuff as a rule for themselves, but they're used by Jews as a sort of cheap way to build cities, and then once it's built, then they can flood, then they can invade it themselves and flood it in. So a lot of these individualists are actually harmful without realizing it. And they're also credulous. Another aspect of being a specialist is that people are credulous outside their own fields, which is a very sad thing, really. I mean, for example, I don't really like saying this, but I've got a very good piece on my site about salt as an essential part of diet, very important. But the chap who gave that to me, it was his idea in the first place, although I added a few important pieces to it. He tells me, you know, that the earth is flat and that stuff like that.
I think, yeah, you just have to take aspects of what people say. I mean, I always say with my guests, I don't, you know, I invite them on for their views. It doesn't mean I agree with everything that each of my guests say, but I bring my guests on because you know, that's the purpose of an interview show. Otherwise, I can just read from my book every day, in my view.
Fair enough.
But what you say about salt is interesting, because
I'll get onto that later, if that's okay with you.
We've just to let you know, we've only got about just under 10 minutes left. We can overrun slightly, but I'll hand back to you.
I think what I'll do is I'll overrun and make my own thing from that, and leave you to edit the rest if you can be bothered. Anyway, I was going to say another aspect, of course, which is unique to human beings, is writing. Once these things are made permanent, you can have writing, and you also have what had been, well, it seems to have been the case that it was imposed on the Khazars, doesn't it? The Khazar theory. In other words, if you have a thing like that, and you impose it from the top, presumably, onto the Khazars, after a few generations, all the people who dislike it are sort of killed off or have tiny families or something. So it can, these rules can sort of spread by in a self, you know, even if ancient Jews are completely died out, if the Talmud exists, it's still possible to generate the same sort of people. So, I mean, that's something that's unique to human beings because of ideas being made, being frozen in writing. And this is, let me just go back here. There's, in my view, which some of your readers might not like, I don't want to, and I'll soft pedal it. The Jews, well, as you were saying, they have this repetitive thing. They keep repeating the same thing, and isn't what's called Holocaustianity now. And in my view, if you look back at the founding of Christianity, the same sort of thing must have happened. There was a sort of primitive Christianity, the beliefs of which, as far as I know, have been lost or, you know, destroyed. But when the Jews got onto this idea of Christianity, they invented all their own stuff, and they just kept on and on repeating it, and eventually captured the Roman Empire through a sort of bastard, you know, poor quality emperor. And so they imposed stuff, and I think, you know, Christianity was largely controlled by Jews, although it developed its own momentum, of course. I mean, you've got the Greek version, there's the Greek Orthodoxy, which lasted much longer than the Roman one. And of course, there are also these other Orthodoxies, like Finnish and Hungarian, I think there is, and Russian, of course. And I think the same thing happened with Islam. I've got stuff on my website about this, that when Jews were felt their grip was loosening by the time Islam was invented, I mean, all the Romans had been plundered completely, and everything was kind of ruined. So they invented Islam and made it suitable for that. What they wanted was a sort of army of thickos who would carry out their instructions. And
well, I think it's interesting because you brought up the Russian Orthodoxy and what have you, and all these other Orthodox churches that are Christian. You don't get them running around worshipping Jews, saying Christ was a Jew. You get the main Judeo-Christian problem comes out of America. Praising Israel, you have to bless Israel, otherwise God will curse you, and all this thing. It was the Jews that invented themselves as the so-called chosen people. That's why in Israel today they don't call themselves Israelites, they call themselves Israelis. They put all these things out in plain sight, and again, I think that by their fruits ye shall know them, and you've listed a long litany of their fruits earlier in this show. And that's my view on them, and my interpretation is there are deviations of Christianity, I think, that go right back. But when you actually look at the way that they behave, they certainly don't behave in accordance with any of the, you know, 759 laws, statutes, ordinances, judgments for breaking those in the Bible. They're constantly behaving against it. Even if you take the Ten Commandments and you go through it, you can show that their policies pretty much go against everyone. What's your thoughts on that? Right.
Yeah, I tend not to worry too much about the history of these things because it's so difficult to disentangle the truth. So I don't really have an easily expressed view on that kind of stuff. I was just going to go on to say that there are other Jewish fronts, like the Jesuits, for example, and also the Quakers. That's out of Miles Mathis. Miles Mathis made a very good point about the Quakers being Jewish things. This was at the time of Cromwell, and Mormons are another one. So they've imposed these things very often, and of course, once you've got some control, then you can, you know, you can sort of sit back and kind of manipulate it. By the way, let me just make a note on usury here. I think if you look up usury, I think in its strict sense, it's not just interest. It means usury proper is where if you default, or if you can't pay the thing back, then all your goods are defaulted. There's a thing in Shakespeare about it, for example. So I think usury is not properly understood, and I include in that Mr. Hoffman, who's good on Jews. I think he's got this usury note wrong. So I think that, in fact, well, let me just make this point as well. There's a tradition that Christianity was opposed to usury, and you get these you know, papal bulls thundering against usury, or at least that's the image. But if you actually look at Christianity, they had, I mean, for example, in Lincoln in England, there's a Jew's house just down the road from the cathedral, and in London there's, you know, there's Westminster Abbey and so on. There's also the Jewish old Jewry is fairly nearby. So I think, in fact, there was a double act there. The Christians, in effect, gave Jews the monopoly in usury in exchange for being being allowed to rule over the plebos. So I think that's an aspect which has not been gone into.
I agree with you. The white race had to let these people in, because we know that the king kicked them out in 1290. So at some point they were let back in by either naive or corrupted white people. So I don't excuse these individuals, but obviously we see who, and you mentioned people like Tony Blair. I don't believe he's Jewish, but he's quite happy to do their bidding.
Yeah, I've seen a conspiracy theory that he's the sort of spawn, the illegitimate son of one of the Rothschilds. I saw quite a convincing teeth match, you know, of them. It's just one of these things. He's just obviously he's just a kind of patsy, isn't he? It amuses me when he's sometimes presented as being a serious politician and all the rest of